underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. John Grisham has sold more than 300 million copies of his books and has had 29 consecutive number one books in the New York Times Fiction Bestsellers list. Grisham is known for his legal thrillers, but among other excursions, he's written a series of young adult novels, a novel about baseball, a nonfiction book about the death penalty, and a novel about Christmas, among others. Since first publishing A Time to Kill in 1988, Grisham has written one novel a year. Some of his hits include The Firm, The Pelican Brief, The Rainmaker, The Brethren, The Testament, The Summons, The King of Torts, The Last Juror, and The Appeal. Nine of his novels have been turned into films: The Firm, The Pelican Brief, The Client, A Time to Kill, The Rainmaker, The Chamber, A Painted House, The Runaway Jury, and Skipping Christmas. His latest novel, Camino Island, is about a heist of the original manuscripts of F. Scott Fitzgerald's novels and the efforts to retrieve them, taking readers into a mysterious literary underground, including stolen manuscripts, secretive rare book trading, and library theft. I have been waiting patiently to interview Mr. Grisham for nearly a quarter of a century, so it is a great pleasure to welcome John Grisham to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
What has kept you out of the book tour business for as long, pretty much, almost as long as you've been writing?
Well, I just didn't want to do it. I got so lazy years ago. I reached a point fairly early on after The Firm came out in 91, The Pelican Brief in 92, and I did a nationwide tour with The Pelican Brief that was not a whole lot of fun. It's business travel, lots of airports and stuff like that. And then The Client came out, and then The Chamber came out, and then all these movies came out almost at one time. And the books went crazy. And so I realized, I told my publisher, I said, look, I can hit the road and try to be a celebrity, or I can go home and write the next novel. What do you want me to do? So I went home and started writing and forgot about book touring.
So you're now out. So at what point did you get the tap on the shoulder and say, well, this may be fun?
Well, I got bored. Best-selling writers should tour. They should go to bookstores. They should go meet their fans and sign books and say thanks to booksellers. And, selling books is a struggle, and bookstores are under siege from a lot of different things, and it's a tough business. And so if I can help a little bit, I'm here to help. And over the years, I would see a story in a magazine or a newspaper article about a great independent bookstore, Northshire Books or something like that. I'd say, I really should go there because I love bookstores. But go visit, go say hello, go say thanks, and go sign some books. I had those thoughts. Never did it. So now I'm doing it.
So the idea then to do it around a book that is so centric to bookstores, to book selling, and to writing, really, that certainly is a wonderful match.
Sure. It's the book Camino Island is all about selling books and bookstores and book dealers and rare books and manuscripts and writers, a lot of writer talk, literary talk, stuff like that. It's a perfect book for bookstores. It's a perfect book for the summer beach read. That's why I wrote it. I'll be releasing it now early in June in time for the summer season. So, yeah, I thought it was a very good time to hit the road.
When you look at there's several scenes in the book where you have a group of writers who are talking. First of all, a little gossipy bunch, aren't they?
Writers are pretty gossipy, yeah. It's a lonely profession, and when we get together, there's a certain amount of envy that we all have toward those who are selling more or those who are getting better reviews. But probably like any, I was a lawyer. Biggest gossips in the world. You get a bunch of lawyers together, they're going to gossip about a judge, a case, another lawyer, whatever. I guess that's what we do.
So when it comes to the conversations that they often have, it is about There are several times in the book where how many people came to the book readings is mentioned. Mercer, who is our heroine in this book, she's had a bad experience. 15, I think, was her top number of people came to her book signing.
I can't remember exactly. I think her last book signing, nobody showed up.
Right.
I think she got a goose egg. She got zero, and that's when she quit. She said, "Forget this book tour stuff."
But you never had even close to that. I mean, you've never personally had that experience of going in and just sitting around a card table waiting for people.
Yes, I have. With my first book, every writer does it, and you never forget it. And it makes you appreciate the crowds. With The Time to Kill, a book that was published in 1989, my publisher was a small house in New York that didn't last very long and later went under. But they didn't have any money for promotion. So I bought a bunch of books myself, and I was going to libraries and bookstores all over Mississippi and Memphis and Tennessee and places trying to sell some books. And I had a couple of bad days, one at a bookstore, one at a library, where I sold zero. So nobody showed up.
So what happened from writing that book to the firm? Because I was a bookseller during this time. I was working my way through college, and I was a bookseller at an independent bookstore. And I remember when The Firm came out, and the bookstore went nuts of selling your books. And then we were like, oh, you know, there's his first novel. Right. And then we had to get our hands on it, and that was, you know, that took a while.
It took far too long. When The Firm came out in March of 91, it was a bestseller almost immediately. And a lot of people like you read The Firm and noticed I had a previous book, but you couldn't find it because they printed 5,000 hardback copies, and those went away pretty fast or disappeared. The publisher, I think, was either broke or going broke, and they wouldn't print any more books, and there was a huge demand for them. Everybody was screaming, and we finally got the publisher to print a batch of trade paperbacks, and those sold out. And then there were no more books. This went on for a year or two until Doubleday entered the picture and bought the rights probably in 1992 or 1993. They got the rights and started printing books, and they're still printing them. It was just a weird story about a small press going under, and they didn't have the means to go out and print a bunch of books. And so there was a lot of demand. And the amusing part now, 20-some-odd years later, is that's the best-selling book, A Time to Kill, after flopping so badly in 1989.
Also, of course, you have to then look at the parallels to that story and the story that you're telling in this book. So you have the thieves who go into the Princeton Library to grab original manuscripts from F. Scott Fitzgerald. They make their way to ? And we then wind up with at a bookstore in Camino Island in Florida with a bookseller who has a real interest in old antique books, first editions, signed. So two questions. One, Time to Kill, what does that go for now?
So between $3,000 and $4,000, if it's depending on the quality. They're pretty rare. I've never seen one over $4,000, but they go up in value every year.
So you have an interest in this. Is that what brought you to the overall subject of antiquarian books and the idea of what you can do with something on the black market?
Oh, yes, I have a real interest. Probably 25 years ago, I started buying modern first editions, primarily of Faulkner, Fitzgerald, Hemingway, Steinbeck, even Mark Twain, and some other writers, but those four primarily. And 25 years later, it's a nice collection. I still buy them. My wife, and she enjoys them too. So for Christmas or birthday, that's my gift. If she can find one, she's trying to complete the collection for those authors. And I give them as gifts if I can find them. You know, I receive them, give them. It's fun. I'm not a serious collector, but after 25 years, I've got quite a few books.
What do you do with them?
Leave them on the shelf and admire them occasionally, collect them, hopefully watch them go up in value. That's not the reason I collect, but it's fun to own them. It's collecting.
I ask the question because there's a couple times in this book where you think of, oh, God, this incredible manuscripts of F. Scott Fitzgerald are just sitting there in this tomb in Princeton or wherever. I know you fictionalized it,
right.
But still. And then But then we look at the other books, and a first edition of Catcher in the Rye that the bookseller in Florida has, just in a clamshell and in a basement. Oh my goodness! It just doesn't seem right, does it?
Well, you got to preserve them. It's like anything that's rare. You got to preserve it, and paper deteriorates. And Fitzgerald wrote his manuscripts on cheap paper that didn't age well. And when Princeton got the manuscripts in 1950 from his daughter, they realized that they had to protect the stuff and not let people handle it or see it or keep it away from light, moisture, whatever. They did what all great libraries do. They put them in the, well, I'm not sure what they are, but they're very well protected. And the heat, light, humidity are all controlled, and they're probably buried in the basement. I've seen Faulkner's manuscripts at the library at the University of Virginia in the basement, first edition collection, and he had like 40 novels. Fitzgerald only had 5. That's why it was easier to steal those in the first chapter. I didn't want to break into UVA's library either. So I've never been to the Princeton library. I said, okay, I'll break in that one. And none of that is accurate, by the way.
That was important. You seem in the author's note that you're kind of proud of that. Like you don't want you can Google that stuff. You don't really need to go there and go into the bowels of the building.
You can. They have a great website with a lot of stuff. The rare book collection and papers collection at Princeton is extensive, as you might guess. It's a wonderful library, wonderful website, and you can learn an awful lot looking at it. I just don't want to ever, in these novels I write, encourage people to get the wrong ideas about, committing a crime. I don't think I've done that here.
Certainly. When you think about the story that you're telling, ultimately, is it, you look at this, are there, I think, maybe one lawyer in this book?
I tried to have none. My goal was to be lawyer-free, and I almost made it till the very end when I had to have, I think there are a couple at the very end. They have very minor roles.
Very minor roles. And so that was deliberate, and is it freeing? I mean, do you think to yourself, oh, this is great. I don't have to worry about that at all.
Well, yeah, I wanted to tell the whole story. It's not even remotely a legal thriller or a legal mystery, so I was determined to keep the lawyers out of it for a change, so I could publish the book and say I've written one with no lawyers. That was my goal, and I almost made it.
For you, is it still tough? Because another thing that you write about in the book, Mercer, is chosen for a very special job in this book. She has had some success at the beginning of her career, waiting for the second round, which did not come quickly for her and hasn't come yet. And yet, she is really fighting with writer's block, also something you have never dealt with.
I have yet to deal with it in a significant way. There are days when the words just don't, show up. But I've always got the story. I have the story before I start. So, I'm never going to have a roadblock where I just stop writing. As far as the writer's block and the ideas, I spend my time, I watch from a distance, lawyers, courts, trials, cases, law firms, trends in litigation, appeals, things like that. That's my world. That's my interest. I was a lawyer for 10 years, and I understand all that. And so when you watch lawyers, the material is basically endless. There are a lot of issues, a lot of good stories, and a lot of ideas.
John Grisham is our guest on The Book Show. The new novel is Camino Island. It is published by Doubleday. Even though you were a lawyer, also an accountant, was writing always the thought?
Never thought about it until I was 30 years old. It was not a childhood dream. It was not something I studied in college. It was just something that came later in life when I had this idea for what I thought would be a very compelling courtroom drama as seen through the eyes of a young attorney in a small town, and which was me, and a lawyer who wants the big case, wants the big verdict, wants the attention. And that was the story, and I became obsessed with it and finally said, okay, I wonder if I could write this. So I started writing, and 3 years later it was finished.
And then were you at all deterred, because we talk about A Time to Kill, and did not receive the I guess it was critically, fairly critically successful.
Yeah, A Time to Kill was pretty much ignored by everybody. I mean, the critics, the first review was from my hometown paper, the Memphis Commercial Appeal, and they trashed it, which really hurt. Publishers Weekly gave it a nice review. I think two or three reviews was all we got with A Time to Kill. It was a non-event. Nobody saw the book.
So had you already started working on The Firm at that point?
Yeah. Well, as soon as I finished A Time to Kill, I had this great idea for a novel that I thought was more popular, more commercial, more accessible. And I talked to my wife about it quite a bit. She loved the idea. She said that could be a really big book. And I was eager to get on with it. Time to Kill was difficult to write because of the issues and the setting and the race complications. And it was, you know, I wanted to write something a little bit lighter and hopefully more popular. And I had this idea about, you know, a law firm secretly owned by the mafia. And so when I finished with A Time to Kill, I had an agent by then. I shipped it off to New York. And the next day I started writing The Firm. And it took 2 years to write The Firm. So by the time A Time to Kill came out in 89, summer of 89, I was almost finished with The Firm. And then when it was published, you know, 6 months later, it became popular real fast. It changed everything.
Changed everything, indeed. The period where just the movies, the books, the movies, the books, the movies, the books, the movies. That had to have been, I mean, you just hold on for the ride at that point, don't you?
We were hanging on by our fingernails for the ride. It happened so fast. It was wonderful. It was great fun. It was a dream. We couldn't believe it. We were overwhelmed at times. And it was, you know, 20 years ago now, but it was still a great period of time for us. And at the same time, we said, look, you know, this is going to be temporary. Let's keep our feet on the ground. And when all this blows over one of these days, let's be able to say, you know, we had fun, we kept our feet on the ground, and we didn't change. We're the same people we are today as we were when I was a, you know, hungry lawyer. And I think we've done that.
It's amazing to me because, and I'm sure many people could argue this and probably do, but when you look at the quantity, but also the quality at that time, the books just, they were great. I mean, they still are, but given the pressure that you were under working not only in publishing, but also in the film world, you were putting out really great stories.
Well, thank you. I still start every book with the goal of making it the best book yet. I mean, that's my goal every time is to write the best book I've ever written. I don't care if it's a legal thriller. I don't care if it's a book about, you know, social injustice, or if it's a football novel or a baseball book, or if it's a standalone mystery like Camino Island. I want that next book to be the best book I've ever written. That's my goal.
Also with that comes a freedom, doesn't there? A freedom where you can write what you want. You can write that baseball book. You can write that football book. You can write a book about skipping Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You sure? And that's one where I try to avoid, by the way, is absolutely. We have a list of words I try to avoid that we use routinely in conversation in this country that we use too much of. And one of them is absolutely. And I just said it, so I apologize to whoever is listening. What was the question?
You know, and now I'm self-conscious because I use that word. What is it about that word?
It's overused. Yeah. And it's used carelessly. You know, you say, oh, absolutely. Well, nothing's absolute. Very few things are absolutely certain, okay? But it's a bad habit. It's like saying, you know, I think, you know, I've got a list of stuff I try to avoid. And stuff is another word I try to avoid. It's overused. So
the question was about freedom of being able to write a book like Skipping Christmas, of being able to write a baseball or a football book.
Sure, and it's unlimited freedom. Although I will say, most of my readers expect a legal thriller every year, and in fact, I don't think I've ever skipped a year in 25 years, and so that's my focus. That's my bread and butter, I still enjoy writing those books. If I can do another book, like I have a kids series, a baseball, football, comic novel, whatever, I love to. I have the time. I can find the time to do it. And Camino Island's a bit different because it's a longer book than, you know, a short book. But I can write anything I want to write. I've tried nonfiction. I've published short stories. as long as I keep writing the legal thrillers, I feel like I have the freedom to write anything else.
You write the young adult, Theodore Boone. Do you like a series? Is a series fun to you? Because that you could write a series.
Yeah, it's evolving. I've written six of them. I'm beginning to wonder how long I can sustain it. You know, you have to write a few to see how the characters develop and how the stories develop. And I skipped it. I skipped Theo last year. I plan to write one this fall to publish about a year from now. But I'm really wondering how long I can sustain stories about Theo. Maybe 10 books, maybe 20. I don't know. But I have six under my belt. I have plans for the seventh. That's still evolving.
Is that you or the topic? Meaning that there's always things to write about legal-wise, but is it also for you the enjoyment of spending time with one character where you could spend your time with someone else?
It's evolving. It's evolving. That's all that's evolving. The first six books I spent with a lot of time with Theo and really loved the kid, and I'm not over that. I'm not over that. So I'll keep writing those. But I do, I catch myself thinking, is Theo worth all this time when I could be writing something else? I'm starting to have those conversations with myself.
You mentioned why you chose Fitzgerald, and certainly a good reason, because those manuscripts, there were only five, and those manuscripts were in one place. But obviously you have a great love for the writer. Talk a little bit about that, and yes, we as readers also learn a little bit about Fitzgerald and his writing.
Well, yeah, he was one of the greatest American writers, and I love the period of time when he and Hemingway were both in Paris, the Lost Generation, and they were pals, they feuded, they hung out together, they drank together. Both of them were world-class drinkers. They had a lot of mutual friends, and that's a special time, I think, in American literature, even though it took place in Paris. You had these two guys who were, writing some of their best stuff. Stories like that, there's a couple stories about Faulkner, a couple stories about Hemingway, one about his drinking, daiquiris in Cuba, just stuff like that I've picked up over the years. It was fun to work that in a novel.
So in the late 80s, early 90s, when it's you, Tom Clancy, Stephen King, it's not, I mean, it's cool, but it's not like that, right?
I never met those guys. I mean, I have met Stephen King. We still see each other. Met Clancy one time. Never met Crichton. He passed away a few years ago. Became friends with Pat Conroy. Pat was a buddy. He died last year. Writers are a weird bunch. again, it's a lonely profession. We don't hang out and collaborate and talk about our books with each other. So, yeah, and we work from home. We don't go to an office every day and meet people and hang around people. So. That's one good thing about this book tour is everywhere I go, I'm inviting local writers to come, by for a conversation and meeting them for the first time. Plan to meet a lot of writers over the next month.
And you're going to be podcasting those, and it's really neat because you get to, it's not so much them interviewing you as two writers talking about the craft.
And fans love it. The people love it. They love it. We take questions. They love to ask us questions about our work, our process, books. We've only done two. We'll do the third one here at Northshire. And so far, they've been very entertaining.
It just seems right, obviously, because in reading Camino Island, man, that the book is very, it feels this bookstore that we are talking in very similar.
Yeah, it's a great independent bookstore. Upstairs, downstairs, cafe, coffee bar, porch, terrace, people, it's a destination. Great books, great bookseller, great staff. People come here to hang out for hours. And I love to do that. I love bookstores.
When you look at what's next for you, what's next for you?
Well, the legal thriller will come out on October 24th, and that's already being planned. Book's almost written. I'll finish it up in the month of June, July. And, I have some downtime this summer, may tour some more. And after I normally get kind of bored after Labor Day and want to write something. Last year it was Camino Island. This year I plan for it to be a Theo book. So I'm always thinking, one or two books down the road. I'm not slowing down. I don't work that hard.
And it's still fun.
It's tremendous fun. It's fun being here and Vermont for the second time in my life at a great bookstore, assigning books, doing interviews, hanging out. That's fun.
John Grisham's new novel is Camino Island. It is published by Doubleday. Sir, it's very much worth the wait to speak to you. I thank you very much for sharing with us on this week's show.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Thanks to Northshire Books for the space, northshire.com. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.